Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. All right, guys, welcome back to another Cryptoconomy podcast episode. Doing another quick read today. I have finally settled on one from Coindesk.com regarding Ethereum and everything that's going on. This one's by Rachel Rose O'Leary, and she actually has a number of good articles in the last 7 or 8 days, all covering what's going on with Ethereum, what happened at the EIP Zero meeting, and kind of what's going on with the parity stuff. So, as well as Vitalik's, just a couple days ago, the unveiling of Casper and what it could look like if it was implemented on Ethereum. But this is one that was posted on May 3rd, so it's like she's got like 4 more recent articles, but this one I think kind of covers a broad scope of it, and it's titled "New Ideas Energize Ethereum, Though True Signaling Solution is Still Elusive." So we'll get to some discussion about it afterward, but for now, let's go ahead and jump on in. Put enough heads together and you might just solve governance. At least that was the idea behind a private 2-day meeting of top researchers who met in Toronto this week to discuss how decisions should be made on Ethereum, the world's second most valuable blockchain network. Named EIP Zero, a nod to the platform's process for attempting code changes, the meeting consisted of members from a variety of startups and nonprofits working to advance the technology, with notable members including Parity Technologies, the Web3 Foundation, the Ethereum Foundation, Giveth, Aragon, Consensus, MetaMask, and others. Designed to give participants a protected space to discuss one of the platform's hardest problems, much of the focus was around a handful of issues that have caused controversy over the past few months. Whether it was the debate over how to return frozen funds, whether to limit Ether issuance, or to reject mining hardware advances, developers have struggled with how best to measure and enact the will of the diverse and polarized community. But for such a theoretical unknown, the meeting proved highly productive, participants said. Quote, "One thing that immediately became apparent through the workshop was the question of community," core developer Lane Reddick told Coindesk. "I think it is the single biggest takeaway from this event," end quote. According to Reddick, much of the discussion surrounded how to better identify what constitutes a community member or someone who should have a say in just how Ethereum develops and how to accurately measure their sentiment. Toward this, Reddick said several companies at the event expressed an interest in funding the development of open-source sentiment-gathering tools that could better measure the will of identified parties when it came to contentious change. Quote, "There's general consensus that we need better signals," Reddick told Coindesk. And while the choice to keep the working group small and invite-only has already ruffled some feathers on Reddit, with some warning that such a formula contradicts the openness of the platform, it was clear from the event documentation that aligning to the community was the central concern. Reddick told Coindesk, quote, "The community is critical to all of us. I can speak as myself as a core developer. I care a great deal about what the community thinks, but I do struggle to gauge sentiment. The signal-to-noise ratio tends to be very low on channels like Reddit," end quote. Better signals. Of course, it's well known by now that social media can be a noisy and hostile place. Quote, "Everyone on the internet needs to chill out and not be so mean to everybody," community manager Hudson Jameson said at the public panel following the event. Several others echoed this point, stating that while channels such as Twitter and Reddit can be filled with abusive uproar, it's not clear whether the loudest voices fairly represent the opinions of all. And when it comes to the platform's hardest decisions, such as whether to hard fork to return money lost in the parity fund freeze of November of last year, clean signals are crucial. Quote, "There's a very strong voice for immutability on channels like Reddit," Dan Finlay from Ethereum wallet MetaMask said at a later public discussion. "I'm seriously suspicious of those. Maybe they're sock puppets. I didn't see them very well represented here," end quote. As such, event participants put their heads together to better isolate the various groups that have different stake within the platform, including protocol developers, application users, miners, investors, full nodes, governments, and regulators. The diversity of signals can be collected with purpose-built tooling directed towards each group and possibly aggregated onto a website that would visibly depict the different leanings and inclinations. Quote, "What we really want are signal aggregators or bundles of signals," end quote, Redig told CoinDesk in an interview. And there was a lot of creation discussion on how to achieve this, too. Speaking in the public panel following the event, Griff Green from decentralized charity Giveth suggested mirroring the efforts deployed by Bitcoin in the midst of the scaling debate, using tools like the website coin.dance, where the signals sent out by the biggest mining pools were neatly depicted. Redig also expressed other ideas that could extend beyond the biggest players to the smallest ecosystem members as well, by including an option in wallet software to signal a position with a simple transaction. Redig explained, quote, "By reducing friction, maybe you'll increase participation. Any single signal is by definition not sufficient," end quote. Crypto's magic power. And when contention remains, there's always the option to split. Speaking at the event, several attendees expressed that far from being feared, the ability to create a new version of the Ethereum blockchain in the case of divisive decisions is the ultimate non-coercive tool for dissident groups to enact their opinions. Quote, "Forks are absolutely essential," Redig said. Indeed, in allowing communities the possibility of exit, Redig and others expressed that the option to split off in case of contention is one of the key advantages that blockchains have over traditional governments. As such, a dedicated working group on Tuesday discussed how to make forks less dire, ways to cheapen, increase security, and destigmatizing community divides when they do inevitably occur. Quote, "A fork is going to happen. I mean, eventually there will be a fork," Redig said, though he stressed the sentiment is more theoretical than a commentary on current events. However, while a split is a clean way to settle disputes, there's messy technical complications when it comes to enacting such a divide on Ethereum. Because Ethereum is not just a blockchain, but a computation platform as well, every decentralized application would simultaneously coexist on both versions of the platform, as well as proving complicated for the many, many businesses that rely on Ethereum software. This could spark unanticipated strangeness in other types of decentralized applications as well. Quote, "What happens to a stablecoin?" Redig asked. "Does it stay at $1 on both blockchains, and now you have $2? Or is it 25 cents on one blockchain and 75 cents on the other?" End quote. Redig said that, like many of the sessions that occurred over the 2 days, the result was non-conclusive, but attendees will be running a monthly online meetup dedicated to such conversations. And it is clear that in spite of risks, splits are still a value fallback method. Quote, "The fact that in a bloodless way we can neatly fork and each group can go off and do their own thing and we can bisect along the lines of values, that is a magic power," Redig said. He concluded, "We should not be afraid to use it, because that is our magic power." End quote. So I think you kind of get the idea of what's going on. There's still a lot more stuff to cover. Unfortunately, I'm a little low on time today. And with Consensus 2018 right around the corner, I kind of want to spend a good bit of focus on Ethereum and what's going on. I think I'm going to read at least one more of Rachel O'Leary's articles, and then something, I think, by Vitalik about blockchain governance. I'm very interested in what's going on with Ethereum and all of these debates and kind of governance models, but I'm also really skeptical of it as a formal system. Like the article stated, and kind of the overall presumption of the entire thing, as well as everyone's comments, is that, you know, it's not clear that we're doing what everybody wants. And I think there's a bit of a elephant in the room with this kind of thinking, that it's important to merely do whatever the majority wants to do, even if that is a disastrous or bad decision. In my nerd dive into economics and history for the past decade, at least, I dug into it like a freak. Everything I've seen suggests the idea of trying to... Democracy is not a good form of governance. It doesn't end up in, you know, some intelligent or conservative alterations. It almost becomes just this push for expedience and devolves into the least common denominator of societal ignorance. Like, everybody just does the one thing that... this one issue just suddenly becomes the most important thing in the world, and so many things that are going on just get ignored because you can just quickly drum up emotion about some particular topic, and then it's just like, okay, we all have to make some sort of a change because clearly there's a problem, so the change that finally happens is just the dumbest, simplest possible thing that everybody can have some measure of relation to. That everybody can identify with, which is almost universally the wrong thing to do. Like, anything that's complicated or nuanced, or God forbid, counterintuitive, you're more likely to see the opposite of what actually needs to happen being the only thing that a majority of people can identify with because it's simpler and easier to digest. So, I think, in a governance model, it could very well be more important that you're building a system that's resistant to 70 or 80% of the people wanting a change, rather than one where we have to make sure we need 70 or 80% of the people to get a change. Now, as Rettig says, and all of this discusses, is, well, everybody has the freedom to just hop, you know, one way or the other. Like, we can split the blockchain. We can get angry and just go our separate ways. So that is a very different... it certainly changes the dynamic. And that's why I think it's really interesting, because I don't know if the governance system is a good thing or if the fact that there's the ability to split is good enough of a governance system. So I don't know. I have a bit of contention around the idea of blockchain governance. And I'm not saying that means they're doomed to fail. In fact, just the opposite. Like, I'm really excited about seeing these things tested and what are the possibilities. We have these petri dishes of social experiments that are going on. And is it good to measure Twitter or Reddit sentiment? And I find it interesting that he said, who was it? Was it Griff Green, I believe? It's either Griff Green or Rettig, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, no, it was Dan Finlay, immutability was a big topic on Reddit, but they're suspicious, are these sock puppets, because they don't see them represented at the EIP-0. But that's another interesting thing, is like, I feel like the conservatism and immutability of the underlying protocol, like, I personally would consider that absolutely paramount. And, I mean, people's views of the world are incredibly narrow, and that's a built-in limitation. Like, we can't consume everything, so we have to build these narratives about what's going on. Like, what does the community want? What are the interactions at play, and that's why I'd like somebody can look at the exact same information in the exact same world and tell themselves an insanely polarized story from another person as to what is happening and what the consequences are going to be. But it's funny because, you know, a lot of these articles that I've read about this talk about how big of a problem the Bitcoin governance system is and how we need to fix it. And it's hilarious because I don't actually see, I think the fact that any change being pushed onto the protocol stack is such a huge, contentious, screaming, long-term argument is actually a great thing. The less resistance there is to making changes, the more susceptible it becomes to just political expediency. It's just like, oh, well, we need to do this now. And we're talking about these are the foundations, like this protocol for exchange and economic activity would be the foundation of whatever society or community is built from it. Meaning that like even a minor adjustment in incentives can have enormous and or disastrous changes 5 or 6 years down the road. So if everybody can get drummed up about some issue in 3 months, and then 2 months later we have this huge change that adjusts the incentives of the underlying protocol, like, that's a bad thing. You want people to have to argue vehemently about this for 2-3 years, and then if there's no measure of consensus or, like, we can't actually get the thing changed, then nothing happens. Like, I think that's better because it's a system where a committed minority can prevent a change to the system rather than a committed minority being able to force a change onto everyone else. And I think a major part of that is not really some elaborate governance system, but just that everybody gets some degree of personal decision making over what they're following or what their rule set is, which in the context of Bitcoin would be running a full node. I mean, obviously not everybody does this and it's not easy for everybody to do, so it's clearly not a perfect system, but I see the history and the block size debate is actually a decent consequence of what is a extremely conservative and when I say conservative, by the way, I'm not talking about Republicans and Democrats. This is nothing to do with the two-party system. I just mean that it's not rash about anything, that it forces people to take a breather, sit back, and think about this for a year, 2 years, and political expediency is not what runs the show. So I think part of the beauty of the Bitcoin design versus something like Ethereum, like if we're comparing what their strengths and weaknesses are, it's that Bitcoin is like, if we're talking about it in the context of governance, a good way to think about it is the Constitution versus what kind of a society you can build from it. What's that quote that a simple, clear purpose and principles will give rise to like complex and intelligent behavior, but ridiculously complex rules and regulations and governance structures will give rise to very simple and stupid behavior. So that's not perfectly applicable, but it does apply in some way, in the sense that the simpler the underlying protocol is, like let's just get the 6 things or 7 things that we all have to adhere to and then let everyone else build on top of it whatever it is that they want. And that can grow into from a solid trunk that just has a couple of key tasks and enforces a couple of key rules. Everybody else can just grow from that an entire ecosystem, a tree with thousands, millions of branches and leaves and different systems and different side chains and all this stuff. So, like, I really am skeptical of how much should be put into the base protocol. And so Ethereum has always been a bit of a, like, nerd excitement versus I really don't know if this is going to survive long term kind of system. But I've always loved watching what's going on in Ethereum, but I just don't know about its long term viability because of that. Clearly it's worked great in the short term because it can do a lot, whereas building the, you know, you're looking at a tree that may not sustain itself for 20 years, but it's already growing and having branches and all this stuff is going on, whereas, you know, the other protocol is still trying to define its trunk properly. So I think Ethereum is reaching a very critical tipping point or pivotal point in its history, and it could be very good or disastrous for the entire platform moving forward, because it grew so fast without having decided, like, made any of these decisions beforehand. She's got another article, Rachel Rose O'Leary has another article on a discussion by Preethi Casaretti. She was at the Ethereum community conference recently. I think it was on May 4th. And she was a former software engineer at Coinbase and a partner at Andreessen Horowitz. But she talked about the parity fund freeze and how it's the defining moment for Ethereum is coming because regarding how to recover lost funds like the DAO and the parity freeze. And there's a quote, she said, "We're trying to look for a one-size-fits-all solution that works for everyone, but I don't think it exists." And it's an extremely divisive, clearly it's a contentious argument because, I mean, look what happened with the DAO when the funds were recovered. Now we have Ethereum Classic, which is a multi-billion dollar platform as well. And clearly the Ethereum itself has grown far faster than Ethereum Classic, but if this contention comes up every time, I mean, Ethereum was the part of the community that went with the funds recovery, and now they're looking at, okay, we're doing this all over again, and the community is far, far bigger, the issue has become even more contentious, and then they're looking to split, or at least the possibility of splitting again because of the same issue exists. And they're trying to formalize the process of funds recovery for mistakes or hacks or whatever it is. And I think I think she's right. I think that is going to be a defining moment, but it could be a very bad defining moment. And there may not be any going back from that after a fork. And it could result in both or all of the coins that are the consequence of this kind of a decision just falling away, because we got a lot of competitors and a whole lot of development happening across the space. And again, this is the world of computers, and we're trying to create a protocol for trustworthy computing. And the exact opposite of trustworthy computing is not being able to predict or have any idea as to what the protocol and the platform is going to be doing in 2 years. Imagine if TCP/IP just changed like this constantly. There's just these forks from how the entire method that the network communicates with. I really think there's going to be a standard here, and that standard is going to be the one that simply is the most reliable. While they consider, quote-unquote, forks their magic power in governance, and I see the validity in that argument, and it interests me as a dynamic for blockchain governance, it also makes me think that, like, a society or a community that's just constantly forking isn't one that stays around. You might just fork yourself into oblivion because you can't keep consistent It's like forking your language constantly. It's like, what's the value of a language if you just keep changing the definitions and nobody can talk to each other? I think all of this stuff is going to push towards standardization, not constant division and separation. So right now we're still in the growth and hype phase. Nobody really has any idea what's going on or how this is going to play out, but it's still really, really interesting, and I want to keep on this and keep talking about it. But right now, we'll just go ahead and close this one here. Again, this was by Rachel Rose O'Leary on Coindesk.com, and she's got some really good writings. I encourage you to go up there and read all the other stuff about Ethereum, because there's no way we're going to be able to hit it all on the Crypto Economy podcast, but I'll hit as much as I can, and I want to kind of get through this before Consensus 2018, because we are going to have an ocean of stuff to talk about after that, I'm sure. Probably keep me busy for 2 or 3 weeks running. So with that, we will close this Crypto Economy quick read. I hope you guys enjoyed that discussion. And if you have any comments or, find any good articles about what's going on in Ethereum or really good discussions of it, send it to me, tag me in the post. Or just message me, that's totally fine. You can find me on Twitter at The Crypto Economy and Medium as well. And obviously subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, leave me some feedback, and share it with all of your friends in the crypto space. I will catch you guys next time. This is The Crypto Economy Podcast. Take it easy, guys. We'll be right back.